Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
Good morning. Our first case is 20-92, the State of Ohio, ex rel. Dave Yost, Ohio Attorney General versus Volkswagen Group and or Volkswagen AG et al. I should take note that Judge Delaney from the Fifth District is sitting in place of Judge Bruner or Justice Bruner this morning. Welcome, Judge. All right, we will start with the appellant, Mr. Jiffra.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. Good morning. Robert Jiffra with Sullivan and Cromwell for the Volkswagen defendants. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Your Honors, we believe the court should reverse the 10th District because the Clean Air Act's text, structure, and enforcement history support preemption here. Starting in 1967, Congress imposed a whole series of standards governing manufacturers with respect to auto emissions and gave the EPA the key role in that process, the exclusive role with respect to the regulation of manufacturers with respect to standards for auto emissions. And that makes sense because you want a car when it's built and over its useful life to be compliant. Until now, there's never been a state claim under a tampering law against a manufacturer, even though General Motors, Ford, Chrysler have all had defeat device issues. And under the state's theory, there are literally no limits on what the states can do with respect to post-sale conduct by manufacturers, notwithstanding the fact that the Clean Air Act has all of these standards governing manufacturers. So under the Clean Air Act, a manufacturer must meet Clean Air Act requirements over the useful life of a vehicle. That's in 42 USC 7521. A manufacturer must seek approval from the EPA in order to change its emission system post-sale. A manufacturer must provide a warranty to customers, and those warranties are regulated post-sale by the EPA. Only manufacturers, only the EPA is authorized under the Clean Air Act to require manufacturers to test their cars. In fact, there's a specific provision in the Clean Air Act, section 7541 H2, which expressly bars states from requiring manufacturers to require to test their cars post-sale. In addition, in terms of doing a recall, only the EPA can require a manufacturer to do a recall.
Counsel, is the state of Ohio trying to do any of those things that you just mentioned? Are they trying to reconfigure the programming of an aftermarket vehicle? Are they trying to establish different standards for those vehicles initially? Are they deviating from whatever the updates will be offered that the manufacturer has cleared with the federal government? Has any of that taken place here?
Yes, what the state of Ohio would like to do is regulate and impose substantial penalties, literally $350 million a day against Volkswagen for conduct that is governed by the Clean Air Act. So that if Volkswagen does something in terms of updating its system post-sale, the Clean Air Act specifically provides that Congress, that the EPA shall have authority. There are provisions for penalizing manufacturers who violate those requirements. And until now—
And counsel, how would Ohio be made whole under that scheme?
Ohio has already been made whole. In fact, Your Honor, under the existing scheme that's been put forward, the state of Ohio has received $414 million from Volkswagen. It has received $33,000 per car, probably the value of the car, for the 14,000 vehicles that are in Ohio. And that was all done pursuant to settlements that were reached by the EPA exercising its comprehensive authority. And I would urge the court to look at pages 13 to 15 of our brief, which list out all the standards. Now, in terms of the alternative here would be regulatory chaos because cars cross state lines. And the error that was made below was the concept of a power plant, which is in a state and pollutes, that's different than automobiles. And starting again in 67, Congress set forward this comprehensive scheme regulating auto emissions. Now, in terms of how to interpret the statute, there's a provision, section 209A.
Before you get there, counsel, let me ask you, I'm having a little hard time understanding what exactly your argument is. Is it that the state can't regulate this because it's a manufacturer who's tampering, or because it's done on a large scale basis?
Your Honor, clearly the state can
regulate someone who alters their catalytic converter, someone repair shop. So why is a manufacturer different?
There's no question that under the Clean Air Act and the regulatory structure contemplates that with respect to mechanics, individual automatic manufacturer, individual owners, that the state can use its tampering laws. There are no provisions in the Clean Air Act providing that states can regulate manufacturers, and it hasn't been done for literally 50 years. And if you look at section 209A.
So if a manufacturer tampered with one car, would the state be able to regulate that?
I think if a manufacturer,
if Volkswagen did it, if Volkswagen directed one dealer to alter the emission system.
I think that would probably not be allowed, but it certainly would be a closer case than the case here what happened was Volkswagen, there's no question, had a defeat device in the vehicles, changed how it was, slightly changed the configuration of the defeat device in the cars that were being sold as they were being sold, and then went back.
So I'm just trying to understand what the distinction is here. So the distinction is that because someone's a manufacturer, that a different set of standards apply than to someone else.
Well, that's because the Clean Air Act has multiple provisions governing manufacturers. So, for example, there are provisions saying that
provisions about manufacturers, but the provision I think that's at issue here is about new automobiles.
I think, Your Honor, the way I would think about it is two points. One would be with respect to a recall, the Clean Air Act specifies if you have 25 or more cars, that's governed by the EPA. So when you're hypothetical about one, is actually a provision in the statute that addresses that. Number two, under 209A, it says no state or political subdivision shall attempt to enforce any standard broadly defined relating to the control of emissions from new motor vehicles. What the state does is focuses just on the word new motor vehicle, same mistake that was made by the 10th District, ignoring the word standards, all the standards that are specified in the statute,
take new motor vehicles out of the statute? I mean, what's the point of new motor vehicles under your theory then?
Well, because what happens is the software updates that were done here relate directly to the factory installed defeat device that was in the vehicle. It was an update.
Every change is going to relate to something that was installed during manufacturing.
Exactly. And Congress specifically provided in the statute that the EPA would regulate that process. And there's nothing in the statute that provides for states to do so. In fact, states can't require expressly under the provision I cited before, any sort of testing of manufacturers.
Isn't that the wrong question? You say there's nothing that provides for states to do so, but isn't the question whether anything in the statutory scheme preclude states from doing so, or are there any part of federal law that conflicts with states doing so?
Yes, section 209A by its terms says that if a state wants to attempt to enforce a standard, and these standards that I discussed before, including the recall standards, the update review standards, all giving exclusive control to the EPA, the state cannot be involved. And relating to, the Supreme Court has said, has broad preemptive purpose. It's something that preempts a large area of federal law. And Your Honor, we would urge you to look at the Supreme Court's decision by Justice Scalia in South Coast. That's in that case, Justice Scalia the case is 541 U.S. 246. Justice Scalia, in determining, it's the only Supreme Court case dealing with the preemptive scope of Section 209A, Justice Scalia looked at how the statute, what powers did the statute give to the EPA to determine the scope of preemption. What were the standards of enforcement? And in that case, Justice Scalia said, and Justice Souter dissented, applying a presumption against preemption. And Justice Scalia said, no, a standard is a standard. You've got to look at all the statutory standards, including the ones I listed at the beginning of my argument. And he said that those standards describe that provide the scope of the preemption. So 209A is critical. Now, what the other side does, again, is just focus on the word new, but ignores relating to and ignores standards. And a textualist doesn't look at just one word, put on blinders. You have to look at the entire phrase. Now, the other side will look at, they cite a provision, 209D, which preserves state and local authority with respect to the use, operation, and movement of a registered licensed vehicle. And there's no question that with respect to an auto mechanic, the states have control, and that's reflected in EPA regulations. EPA regulations, which we cite at page 28, longstanding regulations, make it quite clear that there is no such authority. But what the other side does is it takes the word operation and misuses a dictionary definition. A textualist analysis would look at the words use, operation, and movement to mean driving a car. And that's consistent with federal law. It's consistent with state law that the word operation means driving a car. And that's clearly that, and there's a DC Circuit case, Engine Manufacturers, which says that 209D covers things like state restrictions dealing with car lanes and things like that. So we believe there's express preemption here. We believe there's conflict preemption here because there is a comprehensive federal scheme and all of these provisions, which the state ignores, that clearly give the EPA the exclusive power to regulate manufacturers, and any other approach would lead to regulatory chaos. I'll reserve the rest of my time.
Thank you. Mr. Hendershot.
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, as the Supreme Court reminded just last year in Kansas versus Garcia, all questions of preemption, express, implied, whatever label is put on it, must be grounded in the text. And that's the problem for Volkswagen here. As you just heard my friend talk about some of the distinctions that they're trying to draw in the statute that simply are not there. I think you heard him say that everything would relate back to the car under their theory of relation to. Anything you do to a car, even the single mechanic, even the owner working on that car, of course, relates to, in the broadest possible sense, to the car that came off the factory line in Chattanooga or Wolfsburg. So that theory of relate to is not consistent, as my friend urges you to do, to look at the statute as a whole. You also, I think, heard him struggle, my friend struggled to distinguish how would a mechanic be treated differently from a manufacturer. There's simply nothing in the statute in the relevant parts here, the federal anti-tampering statute, the state anti-tampering statute, that distinguish those. It is any person, the owner, the dealer, the mechanic, the manufacturer, that engages in this distinct act. And remember, let's connect theory to fact here. Remember what Ohio is seeking to penalize here. It is the distinct act of Volkswagen, after these cars were in the garages and driveways of Ohio, of reaching back under the hood, changing these cars to make them worse than when they came off the factory line. Now, my friend,
counsel, do you agree with opposing counsel that the state of Ohio has already been made whole here in this case?
No, Your Honor, I would point to two things. But number one, the settlements in the federal court, and we cite these on page 40 of our brief, citing to the documents in the federal district court that lay this out, the settlements specifically reserved to the states the ability to seek fines and penalties. What Ohio is seeking to do here is to vindicate its environmental laws that protect Ohioans and Ohio's environment. And so if Volkswagen and its army of lawyers and the federal government thought that none of these actions should be allowed, then that settlement could have tried to block all of these actions. It specifically reserved the criminal and then the civil fines and penalties. You can see that. We haven't talked much about what the Ninth Circuit did in this case. It unanimously rejected all the same arguments that Volkswagen is trying to sell you on here today. It pointed out just what I'm mentioning here in terms of the settlement, that is something that is specifically reserved for the states to be able to pursue.
Counselor, would there have to be some sort of set off? Isn't it, wouldn't Volkswagen be double penalized?
Well, no, Your Honor. They would not be double penalized in terms of the fines and penalties that have been specifically reserved by the settlement. But remember, and I think the question does raise this important point, that we're here on a motion to dismiss. The trial court closed the door entirely on this action. Volkswagen can make all the arguments at once in terms of the setting the penalties. And I can tell you, not only would the Ohio EPA, but of course the judges, after some fine was levied, would have the ability, and they do this in the agency, I can tell you, they look at what has this person, what is this defendant in front of us, have they paid in other states to the federal government? That would certainly be part of the calculus, but we're not here arguing about $350 million a day. We're here saying the 10th District was correct to at least crack the door back open and let Ohio's litigation proceed so that it may seek those fines and penalties. But that's a back-end question as to whether there are any issues to sew up if the fine was exorbitant, if that's where we ended up. But here, we're defending an appellate judgment that opened the door back up for our action to proceed. Now, something else I wanted to touch on that my friend mentioned was to focus on the word relate to, and the U.S. Supreme Court has said it is a broad concept. Fair enough, but take a look at what the U.S. Supreme Court said most recently about relate to. This is in the Rutledge decision that we submitted as supplemental authority. There, the court said relate to is not an endlessly expansive. It tolerated, it did not preempt an Arkansas statute, and it said, this is the slip opinion at page 8, state-to-state variation is not something that automatically leads to preemption. Relate to is not some kind of all-purpose preemption provision.
Well, what about the opposing counsel's point here that, you know, these a manufacturer is updating their software on a fairly regular basis, and maybe updating software relating to admission systems. And I assume as technology keeps moving forward, you're going to see more and more of that kind of changes. I mean, does that really fall within the purview of tampering under the statute?
Well, it depends on what is done, Your Honor. I think the key here for this case is all the concerns that the chamber raises and the Volkswagen raises about, and you heard my friend say it, regulatory chaos, you can put to the side right now. And that's because in this case, there is exact parallelism between what the federal government is doing and Ohio is doing. The federal government called this criminal. Ohio is seeking to penalize it. If you have a situation where the federal government gives the thumbs up to some kind of update and a state tries to do the opposite, you would have a different case. And that's not just me saying that. The Supreme Court made that exact point in the Buckman decision. This is at page 354. And they said, different case if the federal government, so that was a Food and Drug Administration preemption, and there the federal government had approved something that state law was trying to disapprove.
Well, would the federal government ordinarily approve an update to the software on emissions?
You know, I think ordinarily not. There are provisions. There are things like the memoranda written in the 70s and later that it depends on what is being done. Now, again, we're at the motion to dismiss stage, but what I can tell you that we have learned from other litigation around the country is there are multiple steps to Volkswagen's act of cheating that Ohio was trying to regulate here. Initially, it was letters to customers. Again, this is not in the record here. I'm just telling you what we would probably look into in discovery. There were letters to customers, bring your car back in, we want to change something about it. Then Volkswagen engaged in a voluntary recall. At one point, they told the EPA, yes, we're recalling these cars to fix something. Of course, that was a lie that was something that Volkswagen tried to hide for years. But again, that approval, the federal government, when it learned the truth, didn't approve of this, like in those conflict preemption cases like Buckman and Arizona versus the United States. The federal government said, no, this is a criminal act, and Ohio agrees. So when a federal and state law run in parallel, they don't even have to be perfectly in parallel, as Kansas versus Garcia emphasized. When they run in parallel, you have a different case, as the Supreme Court said in Buckman. You have the conflict between the federal government approving, take a look at Arizona versus the United States. The federal government wanted to decriminalize what Arizona wanted to criminalize. There's nothing like that here. Those are different cases if you end up with approval by the federal government and an attempted disapproval by the state. Now, my friend also—
Let me ask you about your savings clause arguments. As I look at that language, control, regulate, restrict, movement, it seems pretty clear to me that operation means something similar. And, you know, so I don't find that very persuasive, nor do I find the Ninth Circuit's analysis on that very persuasive. Does your argument depend on that?
2 points, Your Honor. It doesn't depend on it for this reason. And then I'll make a textual point as well. It doesn't depend on it because Remember, what preemption is the federal government elbowing aside the state's government. It is not a matter of that we must come within the language of the Savings Clause to be able to regulate here. Instead, it's the opposite. Volkswagen must show that the federal government has explicitly or by implied conflicts or something pushed the state government aside. So we don't need to come within the language of the savings statute to be able to pursue this case. But textually, it is not just the word operate, it is control the operation of. And what Ohio's tampering statute does is say, you may not tamper with a vehicle, then you may not operate a vehicle that has been tampered with. And so it is control, saying don't tamper with emission systems is a way of saying, don't operate these vehicles around the state that are releasing more pollution because somebody has tried to bypass the emission system. But I think the most important point there is that we don't need to be in the savings clause in order to save the lawsuit here, because that's just not the way the preemption works. You can look at the Ninth Circuit, you may not find their dictionary definition persuasive, but take a look at footnote 23, where they made this the same point I'm making here about Volkswagen having preemption upside down by saying you must fit within the savings clause. It's the opposite. Volkswagen must show that our action has been pushed aside and entirely blocked by federal law. Now, my friend encouraged you to look at Justice Scalia's opinion in the Engine Manufacturers Association case to South Coast. And while there, the court did find preemption, look at the analysis that Justice Scalia went through. What he criticized is what Volkswagen is asking you to do, which is engraft a manufacturer versus mechanic line that is not there, lump together statutes that don't deal with each other. Those are the exact problems with Volkswagen's argument. You heard them try to distinguish mechanics from manufacturers. There's no trace, to borrow the Supreme Court's language from Garcia, of that distinction in the statute. The anti-tampering provision in Ohio, the anti-tampering provision in federal law, simply doesn't distinguish between those. When Volkswagen stepped out of its role as a manufacturer and was really just a mechanic writ large, it then subjected itself to the same prohibitions that mechanics would be subjected to. What if you had the major Volkswagen dealerships in Ohio doing the same thing Volkswagen did here? My friend told you they would be subject to regulation. There's nothing different here. All of the statutes about the original certification and guaranteeing that the original certification of cars and engines holds true for the life of the vehicle don't deal with the distinct prohibition on reaching back under the hood of cars that are on the road and in the driveways to make them worse when they came off the factory line. That is all that Ohio is regulating here. Nothing about original changes that were made on the factory floor. That's what the federal government has gone after and penalized. Now, they've also gone after what Ohio is here, as we talked about with Justice Stewart. But this is that distinct act that Volkswagen engaged in that Ohio is after here, reaching back under the hood of cars long on the road, sometimes for years in Ohio.
Do these changes make them worse than when they came off the assembly line?
They made them worse.
To me, the problem was when they came off the assembly line, these changes just help hide it.
Well, so it made them worse in this sense. They made the cars more polluting because they enabled cars that were having, the cars were never designed when they came off the assembly line to drive around in what we've called in the brief, the clean mode, the non-polluting mode. And so the distinct act of cheating that Ohio is trying to penalize here was reaching back under the hood, enabling the car to run dirty more often and for more miles. And that's where it is worse from the laws we're concerned about here. Number one, the environmental laws, but also of course, consumers who thought they were buying what Volkswagen called a clean diesel vehicle and made it even less clean when they reached back under the hood, the actions that Ohio was seeking to regulate here. Now, one thing my friend has pointed you to, I think perhaps encapsulate the major problem here. He says, look at the enforcement history. There hasn't been something like this in the 50-year history of the Clean Air Act. Enforcement history is not, as the Supreme Court tells us we must do, grounding something in the text. It is sort of preemption must be in there somewhere because it makes sense. That is an argument divorced from the text. And let me make this point then, Your Honor. If we look at the courts around the country, we've talked about the Ninth Circuit a little bit, which unanimously rejected Volkswagen's argument. Not a single appellate or federal court that we're aware of has accepted Volkswagen's express preemption arguments. And with the Ninth Circuit's reversal of the federal district court in California, you have because the states that relied on that for implied preemption all relied on the federal district court that has been reversed. So really, when you look around the country, there's nothing left in terms of courts supporting either of Volkswagen's arguments here. At bottom, then, Your Honor, Volkswagen's argument comes down to, well, there could be regulatory chaos if the facts were different, if something happens differently in the future. That's not this case. The Supreme Court has said that's not the kind of case this is. There is no cheating on a grand scale exception to the anti-tampering statute in Ohio. When Volkswagen reached under the hoods again and made these vehicles worse, that is something that Ohio may still regulate, just as the settlement preserved in the federal court. Your Honor, if there are no further questions, I would yield the remainder of the time, and we ask that you affirm the 10th District.
Mr. Hendershot, before you leave, your friend on the other side indicated that the Clean Air Act has a specific provision that excludes manufacturers because it only really targets or allows states to go after mechanics or individual owners. What do you say to that?
I'm going to ask you to take a look at the federal prohibition on anti-tampering, which is just like the state one. It says any person. It just like the state law, covers mechanics, dealers, and manufacturers. The provisions that deal with manufacturers in their role as manufacturers of new vehicles and new motor vehicle engines, which is why the express preemption clause deals with new motor vehicles and new motor vehicle engines. But the anti-tampering statute reaches everybody, just like Ohio's. Well, there's certainly no carve-out. And this is what I mean when I say they're not grounding this argument in the text. They are, as Justice Scalia said in the South Coast decision, lumping together unrelated statutes to offer an argument as well, because manufacturers have all these other obligations, they must not have this obligation that they do under the plain text of the anti-tampering part of federal law.
The other thing that your friend on the other side would say is that a manufacturer is required under the federal guidelines, under the regulations, to make modifications or to do updates to bring their vehicles into compliance with federal specifications. They are not, as you say, a mechanic at large. That as a manufacturer, they're required to do something that the EPA through Congress is requiring them to do. What do you say about that?
What I say is those are distinct roles. I think when they have these obligations that flow from building the new engine, all these statutes that my friend is talking about are tied to the obligations to certify that a new engine will not become polluting over its useful life. You can avoid any of the problems Volkswagen could avoid Ohio regulation here if it didn't take a distinct second act, reaching back under the hood and acting like a mechanic. It's no different than if several mechanics got together and did what Volkswagen did here. So in that distinct role, that is why Volkswagen has itself put itself in the reach of Ohio's efforts to enforce its environmental laws.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Counsel for the state talked about unrelated statutes. This is a comprehensive statute that has a whole series of provisions that are interrelated, and they're laid out at pages 13 to 15 of our brief, that require manufacturers subject to EPA approval whenever they do an update to get that approval. 6 million updates are done every year, and they have to be done pursuant to EPA approval. The states under the statute have no role in that process. We agree that states can regulate mechanics and can regulate individual owners. There's nothing in the EPA, in the statute that says otherwise. Now, Justice DeWine hit it exactly right. The key part of the Ninth Circuit's decision is a 209D savings clause analysis. That is not a persuasive analysis for a textualist. When you look at the words together, it clearly means driving a car and doesn't give states writ large the ability to regulate the interstices of a vehicle. Here in Ohio says at paragraph 81 of its complaint that the update perpetuated, if not advanced, the original tampering that was done in the factory. That relates to, and 15 of the 21 judges who have looked at this question have agreed with Volkswagen. No question the Ninth Circuit disagreed, but the Ninth Circuit did based on a selective dictionary game with respect to the interpretation of 209D. We think that Justice Scalia's approach in South Coast governs here, and you need to look at all of the provisions dealing with manufacturers post-sale. And that makes logical sense. You don't want a car to have an emission system that's compliant the second it's sold and then say, well, it doesn't matter after that. Congress specifically put in all these requirements, warranties, testing requirements. 25 or more cars have a problem, you've got to get EPA approval and you've got to do an update. We could not have done these updates. Now, these updates were done subject to EPA approval. And in fact, if you look at the statement of facts in the criminal case at paragraph 141, these Volkswagen updates reduced emissions. And the state relies upon the state did not do its own testing because under the Clean Air Act, it couldn't do its own testing. So we believe that this is a case that's squarely governed by the Clean Air Act. There's never been a situation where a state has ever attempted to do that. And there have been other defeat devices, as I mentioned before. Now, let me say a word about the penalty regime, because I think this is something that is extremely important. Congress provided for a specific regime if a manufacturer violated the laws with updates, and it provided for specific penalties of $25,000 per violation. What Ohio wants to do here is put in a penalty of $25,000 per day, which would be $350 million per day with 14,000 vehicles.
And Council, is that before us what the penalty is?
Yes, I think you have to take into account the fact that the penalty regime is provided for in the statute, this Clean Air Act. Congress actually has a penalty policy at 42 USC.
Was there preclusion states taking any further action once that federal settlement was negotiated?
What happened at that point in time was there had never been one of these cases. Ohio brought a case based on the original manufacturer tampering. Those cases were pending at the time of the settlement, and we and the government just said, okay, you can litigate the cases. We litigated all those original tampering cases. We won every one of them, and Ohio dropped its original tampering claim. They came up with the post-sale tampering claim afterward as a way to try to back into this. And so when you look at what happened here is that clearly the application of the Clean Air Act barred the claim. And the fact that it wasn't settled in a settlement, that EPA would have had to go out and get 50 states to agree to something when there was already pending litigation.
So the answer is that they weren't precluded from bringing this action.
They were able to bring the action, but they're subject to it was always subject to litigation, including the preemption provisions of the Clean Air Act. And the Clean Air Act could not be clearer that a state may not under 209A attempt to enforce any standard relating to, which my friend said was a broad term and encompasses a broad preemptive scope. And there's no question that in the statute itself, Congress specified all of these procedures and regulations governing updates of software on cars, and did so and gave all the exclusive power to the EPA, because whether to approve an update or not involves a lot of judgment. And as the Ohio Chamber in its amicus brief makes the point, it would impose substantial costs on consumers and manufacturers if 50 states could come and second guess everything. And in fact, Your Honor,
Council, you've used your time.
Okay, thank you. We urge the court to reverse. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision.